You know, there is not a day goes by that we don't hear some new wrinkle of artificial intelligence or some company that's applying it or companies that are making money out of it. I mean, Google's making a lot of money out of it. Applied Materials just came with numbers the other day. They were just outstanding. There's Google's AI model, Gemini. But a lot of small companies want to incorporate artificial intelligence into their company. So how do you do it? Well, the answer is you go to Matt Rosen, who's CEO and founder of Aleta, and they deal with a lot of companies that want to do that. And he joins us right now. It's good to have you with us.
Hey, great to be on the show.
So everybody knows that artificial intelligence is the great savior of my company. So how do you help the companies? I mean, there's nothing you can't just reach off a shelf and hand them something, can you?
Not today. You know, there's ever since November of 22, when ChatGPT launched their model publicly, AI has been all the buzz and all the rage. And frankly, these concepts have been around since the 50s and refined throughout, you know, every decade. There's people have gotten excited about AI, but frankly, the computing power just hadn't been there to really recognize its benefits. So these concepts aren't new, but you're seeing them really gain traction to the extreme compute power of, you know, NVIDIA and these hyperscalers like, you know, Microsoft and AWS. And so these models are getting faster and faster. The big ones are OpenAI's ChatGPT, you got Google's Gemini, you got Anthropic's Claude. And then for everything you can think of, from creating music to video, there's lots of these little models, you know, getting spun out. And so many organizations are a little bit paralyzed, trying to figure out, hey, how do we even start? And if I do this, do I have the right data? Because data is your differentiator. You know, are we going to have privacy? Are there ethical concerns? Were these models trained with bias? And then, you know, what's it going to mean for my workforce once, you know, we start to use it? And so where I see us today is like the very early days of electricity or the very early days of the internet. There's this awesome technology out there and people are trying to wrap their heads around how to use it. And outside of Silicon Valley and some big banks, a lot of organizations are a little bit flat-footed and trying to figure out how do I take the first step, and they're experimenting, they're playing with it. People are using it as a productivity tool to write emails and stories and reviews, but it's not being used probably as widespread as the mainstream media might lead you to believe just based on the set of clients we work with day in and day out.
But if I'm a company and I come to you and I say, look, I know this is the greatest thing since sliced bread, and my competitors seem to be using this, how can you incorporate this into my business? So is that what you do? You're sort of like a business consultant, and you marry all this together?
That's correct. Yeah, we're a business and technology consultant. I mean, I ultimately founded the firm to really help organizations get close to their customers, create new revenue opportunities, and really create operational excellence, really building bespoke solutions that you can't buy off the shelf. And for the longest time, we did that with custom code and data, but AI has very rapidly becoming part of a core service offering of ours. And we really start from a strategic level, looking at what we call an AI opportunity landscape. So it's looking at an organization from top to bottom and all the different things they do and figuring out where could AI be applied best and where could their workers be augmented with it. And then it's figuring out if they've got software products, how do we incorporate AI into those? If they're developing software, can they use AI to do it faster? If they've got data sets that they want to feed into an AI to get insights and analytics and predictions, making sure that, you know, data is relevant and useful, and then really setting up that whole infrastructure for them to be effective. But it really starts with kind of a proof of concept, really picking out a business case of what's the business problem we're trying to solve, and then taking the right AI model and proving that that problem can be solved.
So is this one of those areas where Moore's Law still works, where the price comes down, you know, 50% every year because of the learning curve and efficiencies?
You know, it's getting there. What's interesting is, you know, when it comes to Moore's Law, you know, a lot of these chips that were originally launched for AI, like NVIDIA launched their chip, it was really designed for video gaming. It is being refined to be used for AI, but there's still a lot of power consumption and chips required for all these computations. And so you're seeing the chips get faster and be more designed with AI in mind, and for the neural models, that's how they learn, as well as models are getting smaller so that they don't consume as much power and water and cost as much. And so that is a little bit of a battle right now going on is, you know, there's only so much power for all of us to consume, and AI consumes a lot of it. And so what we're seeing is chips get faster, models get smaller, so that, you know, Moore's Law can really come into effect.
Well, you've got to have vendors for this too that are reasonable. I mean, these businesses that you're dealing with can't all afford these, you know, multi-$1,000 NVIDIA chips and the servers that go through with that, right?
No, the good thing is a lot of them rely on a lot of the public cloud providers like your Microsoft Azure, your Amazon Web Services, and Google. So a lot of them are leveraging those. I do think we're going to see a little bit of return to on-premise if these costs don't come down. So like over the last 10, 15 years, everyone's moved everything to the cloud, which basically means you're renting, you know, server space somewhere else.
Right.
In simplistic terms, I think you're going to see some of that. My prediction, some of that come back on site, where it's cheaper to have a server on site and run your own chips.
Well, and for security, I would think they'd worry about for security too.
Absolutely. Because, you know, these public models out there, they're out in the public domain. And so like OpenAI will let you license their platform on Microsoft. And actually, we work with one of the largest professional services firms in the world that is pouring billions into AI. And we're a partner of theirs helping them with it. And so for them, you know, their cloud computing costs will be quite high. And so for organizations like that that are investing a lot, I think we're going to see a return of the data center where people want to have their own servers, have their own models in a private area so that the learnings of that model aren't exposed to everybody else. And I think that's where a lot of people are concerned is, hey, if I upload my sensitive data to AI, how do I know it won't be shared? And the answer is you don't.
And how do you know you've got the most recent? I mean, this is an area that it seems to be changing every month or two. I mean,
it's changing every week.
How do you keep up?
You know, you almost have to appoint someone in your organization. You know, I've seen this rise of the chief AI officer. It's something we saw similar in the e-commerce days. It's something we saw similar digital transformation. You really need a point person in your organization that can keep up with it. And, you know, then your organization needs to be trained. So, you know, we've got two folks that are at a senior level in my organization that are like 100% dedicated to understanding where models are going. They're also implementing training. We were literally training our entire workforce of 350 people on these different AI models and thinking. And it's a mix of public courses like from Udacity. LinkedIn, but we're also creating some of our own content. And then a lot of these providers have content out there, but it's going to be, it's challenging to keep up. And that's why, you know, firms like ours are going to be in a good position to help clients because we've got the size and scale to stay a step ahead and be able to advise clients on, hey, what are the right models? What are the right business cases? And how do we implement it in a way that, you know, can be successful and you can kind of build upon.
So is this all software? I don't have to go out and buy new hardware all the time for this, do I?
No, this is primarily software-based.
So tell me about the trajectory of your business. Can you, I mean, this is a virtual business, right, to the greatest degree? Do you do business all over the country?
We do business all over the world, actually. And so, you know, it started in my garage and then a garage in Boise, Idaho, with a couple of people, and we grew it to 150 people domestically. And then during COVID, you know, we brought on a partner offshore, two offices in India. They've been fantastic. And then brought on an organization in Argentina. And so now we operate globally, actually on four continents, have somebody in the UK. And so we work virtually. Very few of our clients have asked us back on site, even though for the first 3 years, we pretty much had clients, our consultants sitting in our clients' offices. So when it comes to delivering our solutions, we can do it pretty much anywhere. And we've got people in almost overlapping every time zone. But I would say the vast majority of our clients are, you know, somewhere in the continental United States. But we do have some clients in Canada and India, as well as the UK.
Hey, as a CEO, how do you put together like a 5-year plan for a company like this? You have no idea what it's going to be like in 5 years.
Yeah, sometimes it's better just to put a 1 or 2 year plan together because things change so quickly. Yeah, who could have predicted, you know, 5 years in that COVID would have hit? And we would have gone from Dallas and Boise to operating internationally. And then a few years after that, AI comes on the scene and fundamentally challenges what we do. I mean, these AI engines can write code. And, you know, a large part of our business is writing custom code for clients that they can't buy off the shelf. And so what we've had to do is figure out, all right, which of these coding models are useful? And a lot of our clients are expecting our developers to develop 30 to 50% faster. And the ones that are embracing it actually are creating more code more quickly. And so, but it is a fundamental risk to our business.
Yeah.
But where we're seeing a lot of acceleration is in the data space, because again, as I said earlier, data is your differentiator. And so the better data you have to feed these models, the better predictions they're going to give you, information they're going to give you back. And so that's where we're seeing the highest demand right now is in that data space, making sure people have data literacy, data governance, so that data is useful for the models, and then being able to use the models to produce. I really kind of categorize AI kind of three buckets right now, and it's evolving quickly. It's great at automating tasks, it's great at finding insights across vast amounts of data, and it's good at creating a starting point, whether it's a software program, a video, a picture, an email. And so those are kind of the three big buckets as I see them. But where I've seen most of our clients do most to date has been in the automation of task space, and they haven't yet evolved to that insight or creation space.
It's a fascinating time in your business, but I would think it would be fun to wake up every morning and see what they've come up with. By the same token, I don't think you can rest on your laurels for any period of time.
No,
It's
not for a
changing so
second.
quickly.
I read this rundown AI every morning, and it is amazing how fast these models are evolving. I mean, Elon Musk wasn't even a player. He left OpenAI, and all of a sudden his Grok 2 model is being compared to some of the models that have been out there for months. So this is just like it's almost like an arms race in the AI space. So figuring out what's going to be the right model, who do you make your bets on? It's almost like you have to kind of try a couple of them to hedge your bet. So it's fascinating, and it's changing daily, and we have the smartest minds in our company really working on this to stay one step ahead.
Well, it'll be fun to check back with you in the future and see where we've gone, because I can't see it myself. Matt Rosen is CEO and founder of Aleda. It's good to have you with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me on the show today.
Thanks. For more of our conversation, go to KRLD.com/CEO. I'm David Johnson, News Radio 1080 KRLD.